This week on Vaticano, learn about the Vatican's role in shaping the future of artificial intelligence. Come to St. Peter's Basilica for a special ecumenical prayer honoring the 21 Coptic martyrs. And learn about St. Bernadette of Lourdes' musical, a production that achieved remarkable success in secular France. For this and more, Vaticano starts now.
El coraje de los mártires, el testimonio de los mártires es una bendición para todos. Oremos para que quienes en diversas partes del mundo arriesgan su vida por el Evangelio, contagien a la Iglesia su valentía, su impulso misionero. Y abiertos a la gracia del martirio.
On Sunday, February the 25th, 15 Christians were killed and 2 wounded in an attack on Catholics in Essakane, in the Diocese of Dori, Burkina Faso. The attack happened during a gathering for Sunday prayer. According to the Vicar General of the diocese, 12 worshippers were killed at the scene of the attack, while 3 succumbed to their injuries while receiving treatment. 2 others were being treated at a hospital. In a telegram, Pope Francis reiterated his firm belief that hatred is not the solution to conflicts. The security situation in Burkina Faso has become drastic over the past few years, with Christians being particularly targeted by terrorist groups inspired by Islamic extremism, says the Pontifical Charity Foundation, Aid to the Church in Need. They lament that the violence in the country can be seen as part of a wider conflict that involves several countries in the Sahel region, including Mali, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria. But the situation for Christians is also worsening in other places. 2 days before the terror attack in Burkina Faso, 6 male religious and 1 priest were kidnapped in 2 separate incidents in Haiti. The crimes took place in the country's capital city of Port-au-Prince. 6 members of the Congregation of the Brothers of the Sacred Heart were abducted while on their way to the John the 23rd school, run by the order. A teacher who was with them was also taken. On the same day, a priest was kidnapped in Port-au-Prince right after saying the morning mass. Also, some of the faithful were taken, but liberated on the same day. All this news shows Pope Francis's call to prayer for persecuted Christians remains current. Following the reception of fresh evidence against the mosaic artist Father Marco Rupnik, the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith has extended its inquiry. This development aligned with an independent press conference conducted by 2 individuals claiming to be victims of Rupnik.
And it takes courage to come forward against Father Marco Rupnik, a powerful cleric who's been protected at the highest levels of the Jesuits and the Vatican.
2 alleged abuse victims of mosaic artist Father Marco Rupnik spoke publicly for the first time on Wednesday, February the 21st, detailing the tactics the former Jesuit allegedly used to manipulate them and to demand transparency from the Vatican and a full accounting of the hierarchs who covered for him for 30 years. Italian Gloria Branciani and Slovenian-born Mariam Kovac, former sisters of the now-dissolved Loyola community in Slovenia, shared their stories at a press conference in the Rome offices of the Trade Union for Italian Journalists, detailing the spiritual, psychological, and sexual abuse they suffered.
Siamo molto felici con le sorelle di esserci ritrovate.
We are very happy to have met again with the other sisters, but at the same time we are sorry, because the institutions, instead of taking a cue from our experience to review their own way of acting, continue to close themselves in silence that we perceive as a rubber wall that rebounds every attempt to cure this unhealthy situation.
Ogni tentativo di curare la situazione malsana.
After facing criticism regarding the management of Rupnik's case by the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors in October of the previous year, Pope Francis decided to lift the statute of limitations in Rupnik's case. He instructed the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith to initiate a comprehensive canonical process. And in December of last year, the Vatican issued an order to close the religious female community, Loyola, co-founded by Rupnik. Marco Rupnik became famous for his mosaics that decorate churches and shrines around the world, including San Giovanni Rotondo, Fatima, and Lourdes. The faithful are divided about whether to keep the mosaics or have them removed. Bishop Jean-Marc Micas of Lourdes shared with EWTN that he established a special commission to explore what to do with the mosaics. The commission will make a decision this spring.
It's a very, 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 very difficult decision to make, but I have to make it, and I'm waiting on it. And well, this occupies my mind and my prayer and my heart every day, especially when I meet victims of abuse. And well, I very often say that the decision we'll make here is made for Lourdes and only for Lourdes.
The Jesuits asked Rupnik to leave their society last year after he refused to respond to allegations of spiritual, psychological, and sexual abuses by 20 women. Amidst the ongoing investigation by the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith into the accusations against Rupnik, the Diocese of Koper in Slovenia, which welcomed him last year, emphasizes that Rupnik is presumed innocent until proven guilty.
Welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from the Holy Father and the Vatican. A delegation of German bishops will meet with representatives of the Vatican dicasteries on March 22nd to discuss the future of the German synodal way. The Vatican intervened against plans of the German Bishops' Conference to establish a so-called synodal committee. This would lead to a German synodal council to consolidate the synodal path. The Archdiocese of Colombo in Sri Lanka is set to begin the canonization process for the hundreds of faithful killed in the 2019 Easter Sunday terrorist attack in the country. The Archdiocese will be submitting the petition to the Vatican in April, exactly 5 years after the horrific attacks. In 2019, 8 suicide bombers targeted 2 Catholic churches, 1 evangelical one, 3 luxury hotels and other locations, killing an estimated 269 people and injuring more than 500. Tanzanian Cardinal Potasiga Rugambwa took possession of his titular church Santa Maria in Monte Santo, one of the twin churches that sits in Rome's Piazza del Popolo. A titular church is located within the geographic boundaries of the Diocese of Rome and is assigned to a cardinal, symbolizing the bond between the cardinal and the Pope, as well as the communion between the local and the universal church. Pope Francis has accepted the resignation of Polish Archbishop Andrzej Jega, who has faced allegations that he ignored abuse cases in Poland. Neither the Apostolic Nunciature for Poland nor the Holy See Press Office provided a reason for Jega's resignation. The Archbishop published a 2-page letter in which he apologized to his brother priests, saying he was resigning due to a radical weakening of his condition. Cardinal Secretary of State Pietro Parolin warned against EU military intervention in Ukraine, closing the award ceremony of the Economy and Society International Prize awarded by the Centesimos Annus Foundation. Parolin said that French President Emmanuel Macron's suggestion that Europe could send ground troops to Ukraine opens a frightening scenario. The cardinal added, and I quote, "It would be ideal to really find a way to get the two sides to start talking and dialoguing." Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. Andrea Stonehauser here in Rome for EWTN Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll be back with more on Vaticano.
Artificial intelligence is like many human inventions, potential for good and for evil.
At a time when technological advancements are blurring the lines between reality and fiction, the Vatican's concern for the ethical implications of artificial intelligence is more pronounced than ever. Pope Francis, in his 2024 Message for Peace, placed special emphasis on the use of artificial intelligence as a tool for peace. And the Vatican Dicastery for Integral Human Development is at the forefront of these discussions.
Connection between artificial intelligence and peace is actually human life, how we live, how we treat each other, how we treat the planet, and that we need to learn how to use and manage this marvelous invention in a way that contributes to the human good.
How does artificial intelligence, how could artificial intelligence threaten peace?
Basically, it is separating human responsibility from warfare. And it means that the subject, if you want to put it in quotes, the subject that pulls the trigger or drops the bomb is no longer a human person with a conscience and with responsibility to the human family, but a logarithm.
Moving from Cardinal Michael Cerny's insights on AI's role in warfare, we now examine its wider societal impact with another Vatican official, Emil Cejuda, Secretary of the Pontifical Commission for Latin America.
The new artificial intelligence is part of the qualitative technological leaps that occur in the history of mankind. There have been several, and when that happens, all political, social, economic, and even the forms of war change. History can give many examples of that.
Pope Francis, in his Message for Peace, calls attention to the risks of AI misuse, urging a proactive and responsible approach to technological management.
The irresponsible use of artificial intelligence leads to injustices. That is the moment when religious thought, such as Catholicism, can intervene. Pope Francis does not offer merely theoretical advice, but urges the opening of a social dialogue.
Pope Francis and the Vatican officials underscore the collective responsibility in the ethical deployment of AI, emphasizing the role of education and awareness in fostering a responsible global community.
It's what you call democracy. It's up to people to exercise their responsibility through their elected officials and so on. And the church accompanies people in this responsibility. So the message is a stimulus to God's people to say, I better learn about this so that I can also exercise my responsibility and not be astonished when something goes very wrong and then say, I didn't know or I didn't care.
The period of preparation for Holy Easter can indeed help us to reflect and meditate, including on the use of artificial intelligence and how we employ it for peace.
Any suggestions for viewers for the season of Lent that we're soon about to enter in, what they could be praying for or also fasting for?
Yes, I think that they could think about what are the obstacles to full human development that they're aware of, and to pray for the grace to help overcome them, whether these are problems near at hand or far away, to ask God to allow us to cooperate in His saving work so that His people, all His people, might live the life that He created them for, or He created us for.
Navigating the digital dawn, the Vatican's message is clear. It calls for ethics and innovation to walk hand in hand, safeguarding peace and humanity.
Tu sai che tu devi fare qualcosa Today at the Vatican, 21 names of very poor people from an unknown village in the middle of nowhere, 155 miles or 250 kilometers from Cairo, were mentioned during a liturgy at the Vatican. Only God can do that. It surpasses us. We are instruments, and God allows it.
"We are called the nation of the cross," began Samuel Arminius, the Coptic-born filmmaker, at the beginning of his new documentary. Like all children of the Egyptian Coptic Church, he learned in catechism about the martyrs who had died for their faith. Now the much more recent story of the martyrs by the hands of ISIS has been added to the historical list. It was 9 years ago, on February the 15th, 2015, that 20 Coptic Orthodox Christians, mostly from Egypt, and one Ghanaian Protestant Christian were beheaded by members of ISIS on a beach in Libya. These Coptic men, together with a Protestant from Ghana, were recognized as saints and martyrs by the Coptic Orthodox Church 6 days after their deaths. Pope Francis announced their inclusion in the Roman Martyrology in 2023, on the occasion of the visit of Coptic Pope Tawadros II. This year, for the first time, this shared remembrance gave rise to an ecumenical celebration, bringing together Catholics and Coptic Orthodox in a side chapel of St. Peter's Basilica. Cardinal Kurt Koch, prefect of the Dicastery for Promoting Christian Unity, presided over the celebration.
In questo tempo di oggi,
in this present time, all churches have their martyrs, because the Christian faith is the most persecuted faith in the world today. In this sense, we can talk about an ecumenism of martyrs, or an ecumenism of blood, because martyrdom has become ecumenical.
Most of the martyrs were choristers who sang the same hymns from their childhood, hymns that Rome's Coptic Orthodox parish also sang during the solemn ecumenical prayer.
And this is a tremendous gift. This blood, which the martyrs give for their life, does not divide Christians, but unites Christians.
Following the ecumenical prayer, the participants went to the Vatican Film Library for a screening of Samuel Arminius's documentary, dedicated to the martyrs, titled The 21, The Power of Faith, The Village of the Martyrs. The film is based on the testimonies of the martyrs' families and takes place in the Egyptian village where 13 of the 21 martyrs came from. The 21 martyrs have also become a source of national pride for Egypt, where the Christian minority has found new support and firmer footing after years of hardship, marked by numerous attacks. According to Father Hyacinth Destivelle, who oversees Catholic Coptic Dialogue, the martyrs' witness demonstrates that the ecumenism of blood can foster a relationship between the churches grounded in trust and brotherhood.
We need this ecumenism of saints and martyrs because saints are already in unity. They are already in communion. While we are still divided, they show us the way towards unity through their example, their prayer, and the blood they have shed as witnesses. The term martyrs means witness in Greek. So we are invited to follow them and rely on their intercession to walk towards unity.
The martyrs are portrayed wearing chasubles in the role of deacons. This representation echoes the imagery of martyrs from the first centuries, showcasing early Christianity's view on martyrdom and the unity of Christians through it. We'll be back after a short break with more on Vaticano.
C'est toi qui vas tous les jours à Massabielle?
Oui, monsieur.
Et tu t'appelles?
Bernadette.
Bernadette comment?
Soubirous.
After moving thousands of spectators in France, the musical Bernadette of Lourdes is now arriving to the Italian stage. Inspired by the official transcripts from Bernadette of Soubirous' interrogations, the musical tells the real story of an ordinary girl who claimed to have seen something extraordinary. Bringing together Catholic and non-Catholic producers and actors, the musical aims at going beyond religious beliefs to touch upon universal themes such as authenticity, truth, and resilience, so to make the show accessible for all.
Je le dois à ma grand-mère, pour tout vous dire.
To tell you the truth, I only told to my grandmother, who had a devotion to Lourdes, who often went to Lourdes, and who used to talk to me about Lourdes all the time. I didn't know much about Lourdes, but I had this very strong bond with my grandmother. One day, we did a workshop for a show called Robin Hood, with 20 or so artists a few miles from Lourdes. And that's when I said to Eleonore de Galard, my associate, listen, I'm going to leave the Robin Hood trip here, and I'm going to surprise my grandmother. I'm going to go to Lourdes and pray for her. And when I announced this to the troupe, they all said, no, no, we're coming with you.
À la troupe, ils ont dit, non, non, on vient avec toi.
Donc ils ont décidé de venir aussi.
So they decided to come too. We met up one evening in November. It was dark. It was raining. Lourdes was empty. We all found ourselves in front of the grotto. And despite the terrible weather conditions, we spent an absolutely extraordinary moment together, even though, once again, there were no believers in our group. And people who weren't necessarily devoted to Lourdes, we spent some time there together, and everyone left a bit shaken up. We had dinner together and started to tell the story of Bernadette, and realized that there was a fantastic story to be told.
Fantastique à raconter.
As its name suggests, the musical Bernadette of Lourdes tells the story of Bernadette Soubirous between February the 11th and July the 16th, 1858. At the age of 14, the little shepherdess had a series of visions of the Virgin Mary in the nearby Massabielle Grotto. According to Bernadette, the lady of her visions was a girl of 16 or 17, clothed in a white robe and a blue sash, who had yellow roses covering her feet and a large rosary on her right arm. On March the 25th, she told the young, poor, and uneducated girl, "I am the Immaculate Conception." Since 1858, thousands of pilgrims have come to the Grotto of Lourdes every year, seeking a cure for their illnesses and asking for the intercession of Our Lady. Despite the producer's fervent enthusiasm, the musical faced significant obstacles. The coronavirus pandemic and subsequent lockdowns hindered progress, and skepticism from the public posed additional challenges.
Maintenant, le challenge.
Currently, the main challenge is to find good actors and the right production team that is going to work with us. But mainly good actors, because finding a Bernadette who wants to take on this role, which is a magnificent but difficult role to carry on one's shoulders, is not easy. But we found Gaia, a fantastic young girl, whom we are very happy to see join the cast, which will soon be revealed.
Le casting sera dévoilé tout à l'heure, donc vous verrez.
When I joined this production, I realized that the role that they had given me was a really important role. Initially, before knowing this character, I was a little bit intimidated by her. But after watching the French performances, I realized that she's a girl like any girl who got to see a light, something special. And what set her apart was her courage in imposing herself in a difficult society.
Era difficile.
In the musical, producers and actors find parallels between Bernadette's struggles and those of people today, regardless of their religious beliefs. In fact, they all argue, similarly to how people are today subject to rumors, disbelief, and hostility, Bernadette's narrative remains profoundly relevant to any audience, regardless of their faith.
What's most important is that the show is not a show by Catholics for Catholics, since the director himself is not a believer. But he went to Lourdes and saw the written transcriptions of the interrogations. Every time Bernadette was questioned, the interrogations were transcribed. In fact, the strength of the show lies in the fact that it tells the story of a young girl from the most underprivileged background as possible, who was ill, who didn't speak French, but who is going to have a destiny for herself, but above all for others.
Pour soi, mais surtout pour les autres.
Underneath her sanctity, the producers argued, Bernadette is, after all, only a little girl. But not just any little girl. She was a girl who saw something extraordinary, a girl who believed in what she saw, and a girl who stood up for what she believed in.